Okay, so it's dark matter afternoon, but I actually took the dark sector part of the session literally. And so I hope that dark matter is sitting in the middle of the dark sector, but my comments are going to be quite a bit broader than focused on the dark matter itself. I want to make two disclaimers before I get started. So the first one is this is a little bit of new territory for me because it's a little bit more political, community planning oriented type of talk than I would normally give. And so I'm going to be sort of direct about pushing what I think are the kinds of efforts we should be, the kinds of efforts that, sorry, what? Okay. Okay. About pushing the kinds of experimental efforts in particular that I think we need to be directing some more of our thoughts towards. And the second one along the political lines is I'm going to assiduously avoid citing anybody, except when I've explicitly yanked a plot from your paper. I think these ideas have become sufficiently communal by this point that if I cite anybody, I'm surely to leave somebody out. So let's just start with the usual picture. If you've heard me give talks, you've undoubtedly seen this picture before. So the idea here is if you just make a schematic of inaccessibility versus energy, standard model sector sitting down here at low energy, it's highly accessible to us. And everything that we know about the dark matter sector is communicated to us through gravitational interactions. So there's a big barrier here between us and the dark matter sector. And nevertheless, despite the fact that what we know about the dark matter sector is very limited, we've managed to project quite a lot onto the dark matter sector. We've managed to project this idea mostly that the dark matter sector is quite simple and that what we should be looking for is a one particle extension of the standard model for the dark matter sector. But I think it's safe to say that over the last 5+ years, the idea has gotten traction that we shouldn't be limiting ourselves to this notion of a single stable weakly interacting particle. Even though these are very well motivated, that the dark matter sector itself might be much more complicated. In fact, it might have dynamics that look more similar to what there is in the standard model sector. There may, in fact, be some type of hidden world with multiple states and new interactions, and that once we actually manage to get ourselves over this barrier to looking into the dark matter sector, we may be able to uncover something that looks much more interesting than a single stable weakly interacting particle. And I think the reason why these ideas have gotten traction in the last 5 years, a number of these ideas are older than that, is really just data has forced us to do that. This onslaught of an anomaly, new dark matter anomaly every 6 months has forced us to do this. So starting, I think, really with Dhamma and then just sort of marching down through the anomalies, the data has helped us to think about the dark matter sector in a fundamentally new way where we're entering sort of this brave new world. And so the picture then is that the dark matter sector is not a lonely particle sitting over here, but in fact that it may involve multiple resonances and that once you produce one of these states in here, rather than just going back directly to the standard model sector, you could go through some complex, say, cascade decay at a collider, and that the dynamics itself, you may, for example, have a dark forces and dark Higgs mechanism. Now, the access to the dark matter sector is, of course, what sets our ability to probe this. And the access between the visible and the dark matter sectors is going to be more efficiently probed by one type of experiment versus the other. So some of the most popular ideas is that this dark matter sector would be accessible by the Higgs boson or some new electroweak states. In more recent years, there's been this focus on new light weakly coupled mediators that haven't shown up at colliders just because their production rates are not high enough. Or it could be something heavier than electroweak states. This is sort of the most boring thing for the energy frontier. But depending on which of these states is the connector between the visible and the dark sector, determines whether it's the energy, cosmic, or intensity frontier that's the most effective at probing them. And it could really be anything that's mediating this connection between the visible and the dark matter sector. So let me pause for a couple slides and pose this question that rather than focusing on a few experiments that are just getting higher in energy, bigger, or more intense, maybe we need to think about trying to spread our resources among many small experiments. Now, of course, you might say, if you're like me, you have this flag in your mind that if you hear the word fishing expedition, you think poorly motivated. Fishing expedition does not equal poorly motivated. And I'll define in a slide what I mean by fishing expedition. It has to be well motivated. But it's well-motivated physics that doesn't lie along the direction of one or two ideas, which is the way we tend to think about things. And so the question that I hope we can discuss afterwards is, rather than thinking about one or two ideas that we've been focused on, what are, say, the half dozen different types of medium or small-scale experiments that we don't want to be crowded out by the focus on a few large-scale experiments? So the idea of a fishing expedition is not something that's less motivated, but rather than simply going to higher energies, more intense beams, bigger dark matter detectors, instead what we think about is many smaller-scale experiments that are designed to improve the sensitivity by many orders of magnitude. So they make big impact on these ideas, these sort of that don't go along these one or two standard directions, and they probe qualitatively different types of physics, but they also have a clear discovery capability. So this is what I would say would be the key criterion for a fishing expedition. And I should say that even though these experimental efforts that are focused on higher energies, more intense beams, and bigger dark matter detectors, I should say that on these primary efforts, we've seen some of these fishing expedition type efforts appear and not be crowded out. Now, I think in some ways, this type of physics is very well suited towards the American way. Okay, American way broadly defined in the sense that it's characterized by creativity and entrepreneurial emphasis. I think Mihoko called it yesterday crazy physics. Okay, the American community has been a source, a huge source of new types of physics and new models to think about. These expeditions do exist, and I'm going to talk about a few of them. These are well known, so I'm really going to be reminding you about what you already know. But my concern is that these are often lost by the focus on the large programs. I know of several of these efforts that even though they would have huge impact and would just be able to end the story on some anomaly that's been floating around, they just can't get funded. Because everything wants to funnel everything into these big efforts. And I want to ask the question whether this is an important piece of revitalizing the US program. So one last slide then before I go back to talking about physics, which is that dividing things into the energy, cosmic, and intensity frontier can be useful as far as organizing things, but in some ways it can be antithetical because you want to put things just into a few categories. Nevertheless, some things have managed to survive. I think more should be supported, and I want to give a few examples from the frontiers. So let's start with the energy frontier. So in the standard picture, coming back to this inaccessibility in energy, what we usually do is start with the standard model here, and we excite states up here in this peak, and then we wait for them to decay back to the standard model, and we try to reconstruct what happened in this peak by the structure of the decay products here in the standard model. As soon as you add in a dark sector, things become more complicated. So you can look at this at the negative side. that dark sectors complicate life a lot at a collider. On the other hand, you could say that the dark sector actually makes life very rich at a collider, because now you have all this structure over here, and what can happen here before you actually decay back to the standard model can actually lead to very different types of signatures. So here's an example from the CDF experiment where they looked for dark photons. And so the idea here was that you have your usual supersymmetric production here, and then you have a cascade decay back down to the dark matter particle. But in this process, you also produce additional light dark photons. So this was motivated by the Pamela and the Fermi anomalies, and you can put some constraints on this state.
D0.
Sorry, D0. Thank you. I have no excuse for myself other than to say I wrote this. Yeah, yeah. Thank you. I'm sorry. Thank you. So, in addition, at the LHC, they've spent time now really developing specialized triggers to look for displaced vertices that are not in the inner detector. And this has been a highly non-trivial effort. I know that as far as I'm aware, the most significant effort has been on ATLAS. And what they've tried to do here is to imagine a scenario where you produce a Higgs, and the Higgs decays down into the hidden sector. You don't know how fast this process is because these states here, though they're light, are very weakly coupled to the standard model. And so this process of producing these states here, which then have some long lifetime to decay back to the standard model, means that they may decay with displaced vertices. And so they've had to develop explicit triggers for decays in various parts of the detector. They've been able to do this successfully, and the result has been constraints on searches for long-lived neutral particles. Here through the Higgs, they're putting a constraint on the ratio of the production cross-section to the standard model as a function of the proper decay length. Now, so as you can see here, the energy frontier then can be extremely effective at probing some of these models. On the other hand, we also know that for certain types of states, it's just not effective at all. So to give you an example, so monojet searches are known to be effective as constraints on the dark matter sector. So the idea is you take QQ bar, you produce dark matter, and then you radiate a jet, usually off the initial state. However, if the state that mediates this process is not through an EFT, then what you find is let's say it's a Z prime mediator, if that particle is pretty light, the constraint on the scattering cross-section dies very, very rapidly. And so what this is telling you is that intensity types of experiments, whether that be a collider-based intensity experiment or whether that be a direct detection experiment, which can really be thought of as an intensity experiment, are going to be much more effective at probing these types of models. And people have done this. People have looked for light weakly coupled objects. There's been some sustained efforts that have been pushed by theorists to completion. So the idea is here, now you're talking about particles that have masses below a GeV, but whose coupling to an electron is suppressed by some small power, small number, okay? And you have some constraints from astrophysics, but then there are vast regions of parameter space that are not constrained, and this has actually been picked up. Experiments are doing this. These are not expensive experiments, and yet you're able to probe significant regions of these parameter spaces, and here's a test from the APEX experiment. So moving on to the direct detection frontier, you can think in many ways of direct detection as its own type of cosmic intensity frontier. So we've been focused on probing weak scale models. So scattering through the Z boson has been pretty effectively ruled out, because that typical scattering cross-section is 10 to the minus 39 centimeters squared. And what they rule out is more in the 10 to the minus 44 to 10 to the minus 45. We have another important benchmark, which is scattering through the Higgs. That's down at 10 to the minus 45 to 10 to the minus 46 centimeters squared. If we get below that, down to the 10 to the minus 47 centimeters squared, people are going to increasingly start looking elsewhere for dark matter. So we had this discussion earlier this morning, triggered by, orchestrated by Jesse. And the idea, the question was, well, you know, you can turn off the coupling to the Higgs by making the state pure. However, even in that case, you don't completely escape the bounds. So you can have a pure Wino or Higgsino where you turn off the coupling to the Higgs. But in that case, these things have rather large annihilations, cross-sections to WW, to gamma-gamma, or to gamma-Z. And there are now constraints from, for example, Hess, which constrain the annihilation to gamma-gamma. So if you're talking about a 2.7 TeV Wino, we're at the level of 10 to the minus 27 centimeter cubed per second. And if you compare that to the Sommerfeld enhanced annihilation, it's around the same level. So actually the largest cross-section is Z gamma. And you find that there is definitely tension between Wino dark matter, for example, and these constraints from Hess, which you can alleviate to a certain degree just by flattening the profile. But nevertheless, this is going to only get better. So you always have a way around, and that is the so-called blind spots. You can tune away the coupling to the Higgs, and that will give rise to smaller cross-sections. That's through some various combinations of the supersymmetric parameters. And what that tells you is as you push down in the scattering cross-section plane, so let's suppose you get below 10 to the minus 47 centimeters squared, for a Beano-Higgsino type dark matter, then that's telling you that this cancellation is at the 10% level. So we're going to be able to get to the level where we're increasingly ruling out neutralino dark matter, making it more and more tuned. We're not going to kill it. But at some point, rather than pushing down here to the 10 to the minus 48 and below, I think what we're going to start to ask is, well, what's happening at this frontier down here at lower and lower mass? And in fact, what you can say is you can exchange that heavy mediator for some weakly coupled light state. And as we've already seen, colliders are not very good at probing those states. You can do better at intensity experiments, but you have this vast parameter space. And this is where direct detection really becomes a cosmic intensity frontier at the low masses. And so the idea here then is that the standard model in the dark matter sector may in fact not have much of an energy barrier between them, but that it may simply be a weak coupling barrier. So what's the motivation for pushing down to the lower mass and the mass frontier here? And there are a lot of motivations that we've seen appear in the literature in recent years. I'm just going to highlight two of them. One is asymmetric dark matter, which is becoming increasingly studied. And the idea here is that rather than looking at freeze-out type of scenarios through annihilation, you ask whether the fact that the baryon to the dark matter ratio is a factor of 5 is accidental or dynamical. And if it's dynamical, you have some mechanism that relates the number density. And so that tells you that the natural mass scale is actually 5 times the proton mass, which is to say precisely in the region where the experimental constraints are dying. Likewise, another well-motivated class of theories is hidden supersymmetric dark matter sectors. So the idea is that we have the visible sector that communicates to SUSY breaking. This sits at the electroweak scale. But then, in addition, you may have a dark matter sector. It may just simply be that the universe is not a copy of, standard model plus superpartners, but you have additional fields as well. And it happens to be that this dark matter sector communicates through this weak coupling to SUSY breaking. So its SUSY breaking scale is lower. And as a result, the natural mass scale in the dark matter sector is lower. And as a result, the natural mass scale for the dark matter itself is lower. And you find that you can write down very natural models that that behave this way. So light WIMPs, looking below 10 GeV, what is the good and the bad? Well, the good is that in many of these models, whether they're supersymmetric or asymmetric type dark matter models, you usually get definite mass predictions. The bad thing is that compared to the MSSM, you don't get the neat predictions for the scattering cross-section. So just to take an example, if all I require is to be consistent with cosmological history, and I want to take a look at the scattering cross-section of electrons, you can see just requiring that the state be consistent with cosmology and decay before BBN, scattering cross-sections can get down to the 10 to the minus 55 centimeter squared level, which is very small, not going to be probable. On the other hand, there are entire classes of models that one could make benchmarks for that would predict much larger scattering cross-sections. And in fact, in recent years, I think one of the really encouraging developments is that there have been a lot of these small experiments that have popped up, a number of them having trouble getting funded, that are really trying to probe this mass window below 10 GeV. So there are two small efforts on CDMS. They're obviously getting more attention now that CDMS has three events. CDMS Lite, which is a modification and configuration where they have a higher voltage to extract more charge. They have a low threshold effort. People have talked about, as far as I know, there's no R&D on modified configurations of the xenon detectors that would allow them to get more light collection efficiency and hence push the threshold down, get to lower dark matter masses. Cogent has been in the news a lot, as has COOP. Domic experiment is using CCDs, actually. These experiments have thresholds that are between 10 and 100 EV. They're very low threshold experiments. Potentially, the issue here is scaling them up, but they could get to very low dark matter masses. DMICE is an effort to drop germanium crystals into the ice cube detector to once and for all put DAMA to rest, I think is not been funded. There are people talking about doing R&D on helium targets. Probably the most speculative is using DNA to look for dark matter. I mean, the list could go on. We've really been focused on just a couple of technologies, but this entire field could really just bloom with many different types of technologies that could really probe a much wider range of possible models. And I'm advocating that we try to allow many of these efforts to thrive. Now, what's the implication for theory? Well, the simplest possible is, you know, you get different mass range, but you can also get different types of non-standard momentum dependence in the scattering, and that can lead to differences in the allowed regions for possible signals relative to the constraints. Basically, you just have more dynamics in the detection. And I lastly want to say that there could be potentially important connections with real astrophysics, which is to say with the shape of the density profiles in objects. So we had this discussion earlier about NFW profiles. And how well do we know that the dark matter profile towards the galactic center is NFW? Well, it could be even more dramatic than that. Dark matter self-interactions themselves can actually dramatically change the density profile. And so the dark matter has a self-scattering cross-section. Say it's a big self-scattering cross-section, but it's quite natural when you have light forces, then that actually forces the density as a function of the radius from the galactic center down. It forces it down quite dramatically. And in fact, you can have interesting types of structures that appear in the scattering cross-section when you look at the dispersion velocity. So this clusters have high velocities, dwarfs have low velocities, and the scattering cross-section can vary as a function of that velocity, and that can change these dynamics of the density profiles, which could be connected to direct detection. Okay, so let me just conclude with a few questions. So these are definitely non-standard types of ideas. They don't go along of necessarily direct connection to the weak scale and to the hierarchy problem, which is really what the high energy physics program has been fairly single-mindedly focused on. So I think we should think about how much of the domestic program do we want to be invested in these types of experiments. Is this a partial solution to investing all the resources in large international collaborations on the energy frontier? Obviously, that's very important. We all love the LHC. We all think it's really important to be invested there. But at the same time, the domestic experimental program is faltering. Could this be part of revitalizing some of the efforts, for example, at Fermilab? And what is the suite of small to medium scale experiments that could have an impact on, I put quote unquote, crazy physics? Really, what I mean by crazy physics is something that just is not directly in line with the main direction of the field, but just looking at how we can try to probe things that are just slightly out of our main focus of view. So I'm going to stop there.